inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Alex Worley. Welcome to the show. Now over to Pat O'Brien.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Welcome to Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien.
He is G.K. Parrish. Phil, nice to see you.
Thank you. It's great to
the
be
co-founder of Shopswell, which is one of the shopping apps. There's a few of those, aren't there?
Many.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit. Now, you've written down some actionable tips as an entrepreneur. I'm just going to read your list because I love the list.
Great.
One is be a Renaissance person.
That's right. I feel like in this day and age, it just doesn't cut it to be a specialist anymore. You really have to be very good at something, but be willing to be competent at lots and lots and lots of things.
Well, you're forced to, right? Because the world is so small now that you kind of have to know everything. I mean, not everything, but...
That's right. You have to be willing to know something about almost everything that has anything to do with your business.
And in your business, the difference between Hermes and Spade, you know, you have to know the difference between quality and another kind of quality.
Absolutely.
Right? Always be learning.
That's related to the first. You aren't going to know everything about everything you need to know about, and so you need to be willing to learn those things to excel in your business.
And stay off your iPhone. There's such a thing as reading a book, right?
That's right. You have to be constantly open to any ideas that come your way.
The third one that you put down here, and I could have made the same list because they're all tremendous, is ruthless focus.
Oh,
that sounds mean, but I like it.
It's a big one. It's one of the most difficult aspects of starting something brand new. You have to really just dial in on what's vitally important with a willingness to ignore almost all the other distractions.
Yeah, I always tell my son, you can only do one thing at a time. And that's what ruthless focus is, that you just zero in on the one, then move to the next one. You know, I always find, this question is the longest ever, but I always find that people who like think of the big picture all the time ain't getting it done.
No, there's always something you need to be doing. And it's often one thing, maybe two or three things that you need to be doing. And one of the things I often think about is it can be more valuable sometimes just to think about the one important thing or issue or problem than it is to make progress on trivialities.
But isn't that, and I'm being an advocate, devil's advocate here, isn't it almost impossible in the world of apps to focus on one thing, especially a shop app?
There's always one major issue, major problem that you need to solve that will probably make or break your success.
Good answer. And that comes to our next one, be able to improvise. Tap dancing on the fly, right?
That's right. It's just really this openness of being able to see reality in its own terms and deal with it as it comes and not have too many preconceptions about what you're doing, what is needed of you, what's needed of your app. What your consumers actually want, to be able to be open to learning all those things.
You know, and in the app world, there are so many preconceptions. One, you're going to make $1 billion the first week. I'm making these up. But you know what I mean? And there's all these, he did it, I'm going to do it that way. So you're right. I mean, there's just all these, you have to come in with your own ideas, use some of what everybody else has done or made a mistake doing.
That's right. In fact, one of the... major preconceptions that we did at Shopswell that we violated was we didn't do an app at all. We built a website first, and all the investors said, well, where's your mobile app? Where's your mobile app? And we said, tell you what, we'll have a mobile app once we've built an audience. Because we knew the hardest challenge involved in our undertaking was just getting people to pay attention to us, to care about what we're doing. And an app was an expensive, slow, difficult way to acquire those users, and we went a different way.
And it's working?
It's working great so far.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. He is G.K. Parrish Philp, and he runs Shopswell, which is shopswell.com. It's the shopping app, of which there are plenty, but this is a good one. How do you stand out?
You know, it's very, very difficult. Standing out is probably the most vital thing that you have to do. The real way that we approach this is with a sense of community. We really engage our users in a very intimate, personal way, try to accept them into a community as some part of something bigger than all of us.
All right. We're going through some of GK's tips for business, and one of them is be prepared for adversity.
That's right. Every single undertaking, business, creative work, is going to face adversity. Hard, hard, hard times. I like to say, you know, every business fails. Even the ones that succeeded have failed at some point, and the founder or the creator just pushed through the failure. So you have to be prepared to fail. It's not that most businesses fail, it's that at some point all businesses fail.
Or as you put down, people quit. They quit on it, right?
That's right. Businesses don't fail, people quit them.
Get over yourself.
Oh, that's probably my most important one, my favorite one.
Might be mine too.
And there's so much involved in that. As an entrepreneur, you get excited about your ideas and about your expression. You want to take it to the world. And at a certain point, you need to realize it's not about you. It's not about your ideas. It's not about your talent. It's not about how smart you are. As an entrepreneur, you're putting yourself in service of some market, of some consumers, of some user base. And you need to be willing to serve them and put their needs way above yours. And it's not about getting rich or making yourself happy or fulfilling yourself. It's about making other people happy.
I used to tell athletes, stop reading the headlines.
Oh, you can't. You got to get over yourself.
Throw your newspapers away. But Larry Bird read all the stats, but everybody else's. Not his own.
Not his own.
Be willing to zag.
Oh, that's an important thing, too.
What happened to zig?
Well, everybody's zigging. Everybody's right. Zigging. You have to be able to zag, which means go against the flow. Do your own thing. You know, there's more than one way to do it. Getting all, you know, seeing what everybody else is doing is fantastic, but your way is the way that will work for you.
And you have to have the confidence, don't you, GK, that your way is right, too. I mean, you can't just say my way or the highway, which a lot of people do. We talked about this earlier where people quit, businesses don't fail, but people do. So how do you get the zag part in down correctly?
You just have to be open and willing to do things that might be socially uncomfortable, like ShopSwell not creating a mobile app right away. You know, that was the expectation. That's what everyone wanted us to do, and we knew for us it wasn't really the right way to go.
Here's my favorite because I do this: practice mindfulness.
Yes.
I think this could be one of the most important things in life. By the way, right now, that's my own opinion. But tell me about that.
There's so much to say. I think this really unlocks a lot of the other pieces, because being able to get over yourself means having an awareness of really where you're coming from and what's going on in your life and what's happening. The ruthless focus is to know what to focus on. You really have to be able to take a step back and really be able to contemplate what's going on. You know, I'm a huge fan of meditation, but when I mean mindfulness, just having the ability to take a step back, disengage from the day-to-day and the chaos, and try to see really what's going on and really what's important and really what you need to focus on.
And the way not to meditate is the way I started with, one, where's my iPhone? I mean, you can clear your head with breathing. It's almost as simple as that. But it takes a while to build up the minutes, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's a great, great practice. Any entrepreneur is dealing with enough stress, enough chaos, enough confusion that I would recommend it for anyone.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect the community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. GK Parrish-Philp is our guest, the co-founder of ShopWell. I mean, when you have an employee, how many employees do you have?
It's probably up to seven now. There's seven, including the co-founders.
Okay.
So
that's kind of lean, right?
It's very lean, yeah. We're a small operation.
If anybody gets out of hand, what do you do with them? By out of hand, I mean they're not following the mission or the vision.
We have had, we've had a few cases where we just had to part ways with folks.
Yeah, and is that hard?
It's always hard. It's very hard.
Depends on your buyout schedule.
No, it's always hard.
It's always hard, yeah. Have you ever tried to hire friends and family? And is a lot of people say yes, always, but a lot of people say no, never.
I am a big fan of working with people I've worked with in the past that I know I can work with, that I have a relationship with. I don't need to have that on-ramping period of getting to know each other.
It eliminates a lot of vetting, doesn't it? Because you know them and you know who they are and what they are.
That's right.
But what about strangers? When they come in, what do you ask them?
So one of the things as a hiring manager, I've always abhorred resumes. And one thing I did at MP3, I asked the HR department, I said, stop sending me resumes. I just want a story. I don't even want a cover letter. I said, here's the position. Tell me the story about why you're the perfect person for this. And I'm gonna know, does this person communicate well? Can they grab my attention? Do they have any artfulness about them, a way of conveying who they are in the written word? And that kind of communication is so, so important.
Yeah. What's your strength, do you think, as a CEO?
Probably the ability to focus, to sort of have an idea of what's really most important.
We are here to inspire, inform, and connect the community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. We'll be back in a minute.
So you sit down and you do your budget and you look at all your monthly costs, your bills, your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would help? What would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. And that is the typical savings, $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your healthcare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and it works. No wonder more than 400,000 people are doing this now. And look, whether you're single or married or you have kids, this can make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. Just think what you could do with $500 a month that can cover a car payment or pay back loans or whatever. Join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Find out more. The MediShare people are so easy to talk to. They can answer any questions. They're super friendly. Call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
This report is Hey there, thank you, and welcome to Scale the Wall, powered by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. For more information, go to npm.com. Our guest today is Nicole Farb, co-founder and CEO of Darby Smart. It's an online marketplace where you can share photos and videos of do-it-yourself projects and shop for craft supplies to make those projects yourself. Nicole, nice to see you.
You too.
You have quite a diverse background. You started out as a teacher, and then you got an MBA, and then you went to Goldman Sachs, where you were head of emerging private companies. Why did you decide to leave Goldman Sachs 3 years ago to start Darby Smart?
I got obsessed with the idea for Darby. I loved my job at Goldman, and I had a phenomenal person that I worked for. I just couldn't give up this idea. I was watching DIY become digital faster and faster. I've always crafted since I was a little girl, but the rise of Pinterest. Mm-hmm. And I was getting more and more frustrated, actually, where I'd go to Pinterest. Felt like you go to Pinterest, like being in the grocery store without a recipe when you're not a good cook. Like that's what I felt like, right? And I thought, I go to Pinterest, I see these projects, and I like, how do I do that? What do I need? And I just couldn't like answer those two questions. And so we decided to build a site that would answer those questions for everybody. So essentially, like for anything you wanted to make, you could push a button and just get the stuff.
So how did you gain traction? Because when people think DIY, they think it's such a crowded space.
It is a crowded space. You know, slowly. Mm-hmm. The truth is, I think like we did it organically. We did it by talking to influencers in the space. So we went after the top pinners who we thought matched our aesthetic. So they were on trend. They talked to the millennial female. They had big audiences on Pinterest, and we would just start like pitching them what we were doing on Darby. Mm-hmm. And those people, and we didn't know it, it's hindsight now, but set the tone for Darby and also brought along like huge followings. And smaller influencers wanted to be like the big influencers, and so they started to come on Darby, and it just grew like that.
So was that your intent from the very beginning, to build a community right from the get-go?
Right from the get-go. You know, I think a lot of times, especially as an adult, you're making stuff in isolation. Like you buy the supplies, you go home, you make stuff, it's Wednesday night, and maybe you have a glass of wine. And what if we could connect all the other people working on similar projects? And you could do that digitally, and you can't do that physically, per se. Yeah. So that was the vision.
Well, you were pretty hands-on, too, as far as customer research is concerned, right? Because I had read that you planted yourself outside Michael's, that arts and crafts store, and I know about Michael's because my daughter is 10 and loves Michael's, right? But you planted yourself right out there, and you started just talking to customers outside the store.
I did.
You were like a
stalker. In the parking lot, I was a stalker. I call that a life skill, stalking.
What did you ask them?
In the beginning, I didn't know what to ask. So I'd just go off and say, like, why are you here? And what are you shopping for? Do you ever shop online? It helped me frame the business. What do you wish you had that you don't? And then slowly you'd start to hear patterns in people's answers, and I started to refine my questions. Sometimes I even tried to video them, which was total stalker, right? Can I shoot you on my iPhone?
And what did they say?
Oh, most people know. Like, no, you crazy lady in the parking lot. I'm willing to answer your questions, but not on video.
Well, at least they stopped and answered your questions.
They stopped, yeah, most of the time.
And you didn't have your multicolored mermaid hair, as you do now when you approach them?
No, I was a little more I was just coming from golf, and I looked a little more conservative. I've slowly evolved.
Well, it's good, but you're like sort of like a walking billboard for your site, right? This is an idea, you're here. This is an idea that came off your site.
It is. Someone shared how to DIY mermaid hair. And okay, I didn't DIY this, so I'm a half billboard on that. I was inspired by her, I went to the salon for it, but I am a walking billboard.
So you were stalking people outside Michael's, but now you have a partnership with Michael's.
We do. We
have. How did that come about?
You know, he the CEO, Chuck, reached out to some people at Goldman and asked to connect with me, and it's been a phenomenal partnership. I mean, it's...
He asked to connect with you.
Yep.
Now, that's got to be flattering.
Early days in Darby, it was so flattering. It was one of those moments where you're like, I'm working hard, I'm not sure if I'm doing well. I think we are, but we're never moving fast enough. And then you get this proof point from this store I love since I'm a little girl, reaching out because they like the brand we're building in the industry. And it was like, wow, I didn't think that happened so fast. And the partnership we have in them is amazing. You know, a big belief is that when people see Darby content, they buy more supplies in Michael's stores, right? Mm-hmm. We make it easy, we make it accessible, we inspire you, and ultimately you'll shop more.
And then what's in it for you? We see what's in it for Michael's. What's in it for Darby?
You know, distribution in lots of ways, but we're on their site. Mm-hmm. We're frequently featured in their emails. And the big goal for Darby is more exposure, right?
Makes sense, yeah. I'm Tui Vu, broadcasting from the NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center in San Francisco. This is Scale the Wall, powered by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. For more information, go to npm.com. My guest today is Nicole Farb, co-founder and CEO of Darby Smart, an online marketplace and community for DIY enthusiasts. Where do you see the DIY industry 5 years from now? It's pretty big already.
It is big. Growing, further penetrating. So we think about the DIY industry in two ways. There's the people already making and shopping for supplies, and in the US that's about 50 million people, which is a huge market. I think an undersized, like I call it, sneaky big market.
Mm-hmm. How big is it in terms of monetary value?
It's in 30
billions.
billion. 30 billion. In the US only, 30 billion. Wow. And that's just craft supplies. So mm-hmm. you then think, people often turn those craft supplies into stuff they sell on like Etsy and like finished goods markets, but just the craft supplies market is a $30 billion market. That's the 50 million. In the US, 135 million people identify as makers. And a lot of those people, I believe, are aspirational. So they're watching the movement, but not yet in. Mm-hmm. And Darby's goal is to help more of those makers start making.
What are the three best pieces of advice you can offer to an aspiring entrepreneur or business owner?
Fail fast. That's the number one, and don't be afraid of it. I think especially if you're aspiring, so you're just starting your business, most things you will do won't work, and that's totally okay. You won't find the things that do if you're not willing to fail.
So I fail forward too, right? It's something that I often hear now too. Fail, learn from it, move forward.
Yes, fail forward. I love fail forward. Fail fast and forward, yeah. The three Fs.
There you go.
The second one I think is stay naive. I think we're often trying to disrupt large, established markets. And if you aren't naive when you go after that, I think you'll hold yourself back. I liked that I didn't come from the retail world or actually hadn't tried to monetize the DIY market in any way because I'm very naive in my thinking on how we'll do it. Mm-hmm. So that'd be the second. The third is build a great team that you believe in and can give responsibility to. That's something I had to learn. It's the only way you can do something big.
You mean you had to learn how to delegate responsibility?
Yes. To give things away, right?
You were just trying to do it all yourself and hoard everything.
It's also important to you.
Yeah.
It's like your baby, right?
Yeah.
Your company. And so, marketing, well, that's really important. I can't give that away. And product, that's so important. I can't give that away. And you really have to give it all away.
Yeah.
Or you just can't progress.
Right. Well, because you can't possibly do everything.
You can't.
Right? You can't.
You can't.
You won't ever have time to think strategically, think of the bigger vision.
Exactly. And you don't scale that way, right? Mm. You're like a one-woman show if you're doing everything, and that doesn't lead to huge businesses.
All right. Well, stay with us. When we come back, we'll talk more with Nicole about some of the biggest obstacles and failures she's faced and how she scales the wall to success. Scale the Wall is powered by NASDAQ Private Markets. Stay private on your own terms. For more information, go to npm.com. I'm Thuy Vu, and this is Business Rockstars.
Freedom doesn't start in the White House. It starts in your house. Here's Helen Creeble.
I remember watching my grandmother spend hours doing housework, like washing dishes, doing laundry, and hanging it out to dry. They called it Laundry Day because that's how long it took. Labor-saving appliances were among the great advancements of the last century, especially washing machines and dishwashers. They freed generations of women from the drudgery of such chores. By 1983, dishwashers could finish in 30 minutes, and laundry took less than an hour. Then, the government began regulating water and energy use. Congress adopted federal standards, and today's appliances take 3 times longer. Now, many people wash and dry things twice, so they're not saving water or energy. The government ought to tend to its own dirty laundry and leave mine alone. It's just not that complicated.
I'm Thuy Vu, broadcasting from the NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center in San Francisco. This is Scale the Wall, powered by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. For more information, go to npm.com. This is where we talk about how small business owners and entrepreneurs face challenges and barriers almost every day. What they need to do is learn how to scale the wall. We'll be discussing those challenges and the obstacles with our guest during the segment, and she is Nicole Farb, co-founder and CEO of Darby Smart. It's an online marketplace where you can share photos and videos of do-it-yourself projects and shop for craft supplies to make those projects yourself. Nicole, so great to have you here.
Thank you.
So this is quite a career switch for you. You were in the investment banking business at Goldman Sachs. What's been the biggest challenge in coming from that background and trying to build this business now?
Two big challenges. That's a really well-resourced, well-run company.
Goldman
right?
Sachs.
Yes.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing. They've been doing it for a long time. And you can go in and kind of sit in that template. There are lots of ways to be creative in an organization. My role was actually one, but the company knows how to execute. When we started Darby, I had no clue how to execute. We had no roadmap for it. Mm-hmm. And so switching from a place that has a proven pattern to switching to a place where you have to create the pattern was a big transition with limited resources versus lots of resources.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is the diversity of people that I have access to in Silicon Valley versus the type of people that worked at Goldman. At Goldman, I'll call us all like type A, all fairly quant.
Uh-huh.
We were similar in many ways.
Right.
At Darby and broadly in Silicon Valley, we have huge diversity in background, right? Some people come from Gap, some people come from startups, some people are artistic, some people are quant. So working with like a diverse group like that is just a mind shift. It's a really mm-hmm. cool mind shift, but it's different.
Did your investment banking background help you as an entrepreneur?
Hugely, but not for the reasons that I'm in an Excel model doing things. Oh, some days I am, but and I won't say that's my most valuable skill. You know, it taught me how to work incredibly hard, how to stay focused. Goldman was a very demanding place, and so you often had more on your plate than you could deal with. Startup is the same way, right? And so how do you decide, of all the things on your plate, what you're going to focus on today? And I think that's probably the biggest skill I learned from a place like that.
So then how would you describe your role now as CEO in civilian terms?
Inspire people, empower them with knowledge so they can get their jobs done. Do the stuff nobody wants to or nobody knows how to just yet and figure it out.
What is some of that stuff?
Oh, we didn't really have anyone in marketing. Darby's 2.5 years old until 6 months ago. And so we hired our first person in marketing about 6 months ago. And one thing we weren't focusing on, but believed was huge, was Facebook. We were focusing a little by putting content out there, but not really focusing. And I said, May 1st, I said, I'm going to figure out Facebook. 4 hours a day, I'm going to sit down. I'm just going to do Facebook all day long. And it's stuff like that. But it's a range. I've been our bookkeeper. I've been the first person in customer service. I'm a product manager some days. I'm an email marketer some days. So.
Well, that's why you're the CEO. You know all the tasks.
I know all the tasks.
And what it entails. What part of your job, though, would you say people would find most surprising?
I think that the amount of time spent on it is quite large. Mm-hmm. And I think the part about the creative phase is probably surprising, right? I come from a business background, and I didn't necessarily have a face in the creative community before starting Darby. Mm-hmm. And that's different stuff, like glittering my shoes on Facebook, right?
And have you done that?
It's the video is coming out tomorrow.
Oh, really?
I'm obsessed with glittering my shoes for some reason.
Are you? Well, you know, bling is never out of style.
Bling! We have this quote that's like, leave a little sparkle wherever you go. So it'll hit the streets.
All right, I want to see these shoes because if I like them, I know where to go to
you
get the video to do
yes.
it for myself. What is the one thing in your career that you've regretted?
I didn't pursue any international experience. I'll even say in my education or my career, we could have studied abroad in college, and I didn't. I was always very interested and enjoying what I was doing in Chicago. And I haven't done it in my career either, and Goldman was a fantastic platform to go do that.
Yeah.
And I think it limits my worldview, to be honest. And I regret that.
Yeah. That's a very honest answer. I can appreciate that because I didn't do any travel abroad when I was in college either, and that has also been one of my biggest careers.
Really?
So it's interesting
yeah.
to hear you say that.
Yeah. Where's the person that's like in college just pushing that? Like, go, I promise, go.
There's a business in there somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm Tui Vu, broadcasting from the NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center in San Francisco. This is Scale the Wall, where we talk about the hard realities of failure in business. It's powered by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. For more information, go to npm.com. With us is Nicole Farb, co-founder and CEO of the online DIY site, Darby Smart. What's the largest risk that you took that paid off in terms of the biggest reward?
I'd say jumping from Goldman to Darby. I mean, I come from a more conservative family. My father's from Iran. He moved to the U.S. In our family, you go to law school or medical school. Like, that's how it goes. Even going to business school, my dad thought was a little strange. When I left Goldman, my entire family thought it was incredibly strange. And you're going from a very stable place to
a very unstable place.
Very unstable.
There's no certainty in starting a new company.
None, right? My first office was the coffee shop. My next was the basement of WeWork. I'd say that was the biggest risk. And it's still very much so, right? In many ways we've made it, in many ways we haven't. And where we're going is while I have vision, still quite unknown. But I love it. I wouldn't do it differently in any way.
That kind of ties into the next question that I want to ask you. If you could go back, though, and change one thing in your journey as an entrepreneur, what would it be?
Focus. We have a huge sandbox. We're going after what we term the creative market. And I think that everyone in the world is creative, right? And so then how do you go, okay, that's our sandbox, and we may play there someday, and where do we want to play today? Day one of the company, day three of the company, year three of the company. We learned, I'd say, too slowly, that focus is everything.
Were you too scattered in the beginning, just wanting, you would see shiny little objects and go after every little shiny object?
You can, and lots of shiny objects are coming your way.
Yeah. People
who want to partner with us, categories that wanted to expand with us. You have a lot coming in, right? And 3D printing is a great example. Like, that's in our world, but do we need to go after it today? No. Did we try? Yes. And so, should we have? No. We learned those lessons fast, back to, like, fail fast, right? We learned it quickly enough, but it lack of focus slows you down.
Interesting. You've had a variety of careers. You first started as a teacher, then you got your MBA, then you switched to investment banking, now you're a startup founder.
I'm old.
No, you're adventurous. What advice do you have for perhaps others who are thinking about making a career switch and starting their own companies?
Pursue what you love. It's what makes great careers. It's not natural to, like, places I came from, for example, business school, it wasn't necessarily pursue what you love. It's pursue what pays off your business school debt. But pursue what you love, and it you won't feel like you're working. And I know that's really sort of typical advice or things we often hear, but it's how I've navigated my entire career. And there's not a day that the broad mix of the day, I'm not really, really happy about what we're working on.
Yeah. Well, it's great because I can see sort of the light and the fire in your eyes when you talk about Darby. That passion shines through. What do you do for fun? What's a fun fact about you?
Fun fact, do for fun. Okay, fun fact. I really wanted to be an actress
you
in
did.
High school. I had no talent. There's no reason that I should have wanted to be this actress.
It just
seemed like I should do that. And
what happened?
And I convinced my parents, we made a deal that if I graduated high school a year early, so in 3 versus 4, I could use that last year to try to become an actress. And so I did. I graduated high school a year early. I went to Hollywood. We lived in Southern California every day and tried to be an actress for that senior year. I totally failed. I'll say that's my fun fact. I tried to be an actress and failed. What do I do for fun? I have twins.
Oh, how old?
A year and a half.
Oh, sweet.
They're adorable.
They're going to be major arts and crafts people.
I hope so. They're my two little boys. But yeah, we have paint already. They put it on the walls. I hang out with my boys.
Wonderful. Okay, what are the three biggest lessons to learn in dealing with the challenges of growing or starting a business?
It's okay to fail. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's a good thing. It means you're experimenting and are more likely to find a win. Mm-hmm. You cannot get big without a great team that you delegate to. Learn to recruit those people and give them serious responsibility fast. Stay focused. Mm-hmm. Have a vision and a big mission. But stay focused on your path to pursuit of it.
And just curious, where did the name for your company, Darby Smart, come from? It's interesting. It's unusual.
I know. She's my muse.
She's your muse.
The brands that I most admire are people. Michael Kors, Coco Chanel, Estee Lauder, they happen to all have like these two-person names. Mm-hmm. And when I was thinking about building a technology company, I actually wanted it to feel like a person and a brand that people identified with. And then in our market, it tends to be that people have named their companies after themselves. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't what we were building. We weren't building like Nicole's brand. We were building a platform for people to share their ideas and to collaborate. And so I just made up this person that I'd want to be in the Michael store with me, like this witty, trendy girl named Darby. So,
Darby, you're, you know, you're every woman. Every woman's friend, right?
Yes, every woman's friend.
Well, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. Have fun with the twins and keep dyeing your hair away.
I love
that creative look.
Thank you, Twee. It's been amazing.
Nicole Farb, CEO of Darby Smart. Join us every Friday as we scale the wall powered by NASDAQ Private Market. Stay private on your own terms. For more information, you can go to npm.com. I'm Twee Vu, and this is Business Rockstars.
So you sit down and you do your budget and you look at all your monthly costs, your bills, your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would help? What would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. And that is the typical savings, $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your healthcare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and it works. No wonder more than 400,000 people are doing this now. And look, whether you're single or married or you have kids, this can make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. Just think what you could do with $500 a month that can cover a car payment or pay back loans or whatever. Join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Find out more. The MediShare people are so easy to talk to. They can answer any questions. They're super friendly. Call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
4 out of 5 employers who post a job in ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. ZipRecruiter. The smartest way to hire. And right now you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to this exclusive web address, ziprecruiter.com/free. That's ziprecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/free.
This is Business Rockstars.
Why the smartest people choose meaning over money. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Joining me right now is my guest, Bill Conley, who's the author of The Success Disconnect. And the question is, why the smartest people choose meaning over money? And that's the subtitle of your book here. So answer that question for us.
Yeah, it's hard for me to answer it without thinking about it in such a big term of a book, you know, but to boil it down, it's not that money is bad, which I think is one thing that is a narrative out there. It's that the people that tend to achieve monumental success, in my experience, and I'm sure you've interviewed probably more people than I have, they tend to follow something that they're passionate about and that they have some sort of intrinsic meaning and value that they can prescribe to it. Yeah. And then the money and the success in traditional terms tends to follow that.
I find exactly what you're saying is, and I'll just basically say it in a different way, is they have found a purpose, a mission, a vision, call it what you want. They have found something that they're willing to trade their life for. And as a result, it doesn't matter how many times they get knocked down. It doesn't matter how much money they don't make in the beginning. As long as you have found a purpose to serve that's greater than yourself, you will always do what it takes to achieve it. And so I think the book, Why the Smartest People Choose Meaning Over Money, is exactly that. They have found a purpose to serve that's so much bigger than themselves. And the byproduct of that is lots of money. For example, Peter Diamandis, a mentor of mine, says if you want to become a billionaire, you have to solve a problem that's going to impact a billion people's lives. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that when you take it down to a micro level and you look at that, it's so daunting. Like, think about writing a book or starting a business or saying, I'm going to impact a billion people's lives. I mean, that's scary.
That's
to think
terrifying.
About, right?
Especially when you put that out in the public and you state that to everybody.
Right. And then you're committed to it, right?
So you're committed.
That's the difficult part. And what people need to get over is, well, to do that, I might have to start by impacting like five people's lives.
Yeah, it's just step by step. It's like the old cliche sayings, right? A journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step, or the Great Wall of China was built one brick at a time, right? All those little things.
I'll give you another little story just to plug my other obsession mentor, Will Smith. Is one of the things he talks about is he tells a story about when he was a young child, his father knocked down this brick wall that was outside their home. And him and his brother had to build it up one brick at a time. And it took them, I don't know, several months or a couple of years or something to even do it. But that's where he learned the lesson that you have to take one step at a time. When you look back at whether, you're building something in a physical nature, building a building, or whether you're working on a book or a consulting program or a business, when you look back on it, you could say, oh, yeah, it took all those steps. But when you're starting there and you're trying to look at the steps that haven't happened yet, it's so overwhelming that you really just need to start looking at what that next step is.
So what I'm hearing from you is that if you're going to impact 1 billion people's lives, don't focus on, I don't even know how yet. Just focus on, how am I going to serve one person and the next person and the next person? And on my journey, you can start to ask yourself other questions like, who can join me in this? What are ways that we can scale this? Things like that. But in the beginning, those questions down the road are not so important to answer.
Right.
It's the first one, which is, how can I just take that first step? How can I serve the first person?
And one of the things that you just made me think of when you're talking about that is that there's no really unique problems in the world, right? Like, I was never a fan of history in school. I was like, I don't really care about that because it's not going to serve me in anything. And the more I've learned about the world, I guess, the more of appreciation I have for history.
Because, me too, but I had to go out into the real world to experience it, not a textbook.
Right, exactly. And then when you do in the real world and you learn from people who have had these experiences, you realize, wow, there's no real unique problem. It's all just a rehashing. There's human nature, we repeat ourselves, right? So in the context of what you're talking about, if you can impact one person's life, the chance is that there's a bunch of other people that have that same problem or same challenge or same issue that they're trying to overcome, and you can replicate that at scale, then that's when you're going to create that billion-dollar type of organization or problem-solving technique.
Bill Conley is my guest. He's the author of The Success Disconnect. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Bill Conley is the author of The Success Disconnect, and we're talking about your subtitle here, Why the Smartest People Choose Meaning Over Money. So we've got John, he's tuned in with us right now, and he says, you know, my business right now is all about money, and we haven't really found a meaning to serve yet. What do we tell that guy? What do we tell John?
Well, I would tell John, it's great that you have this business that's all about money. I don't find that
a business won't be around without money.
Right, so. It won't be around without it. But I find that, you know, again, to take that next step, you have to have some sort of purpose. So one of the things that I think people struggle with if they're in a business world and they're trying to really find, well, what does this mean for me as a person? What values does this mean? Because there's a great, I think it was David Brooks who wrote about this, but live for your eulogy, not your resume, right? Because at the end of the day, when people are talking about Mark Lack, they're not going to say, he generated thousands of leads. You know, this guy was a prolific lead generator. They're going to talk about the lives you influenced, the type of person you were, your character. And so if you live for those values, and as a business person, you can make a bunch of money with a commodity or something that isn't necessarily changing the world. But then what you do with that, you create jobs, you enable people to give back to their communities, you invest in other technologies or other things that are helping the world around you. There's ways to give back that, you know, can still allow you to make a lot of money, but can also fulfill that deeper seated need to have a purpose in your life.
Okay, so let's switch gears now. I love what you're saying, and I want to kind of relate that to the aspiring entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. We've got the aspiring entrepreneur. They have a 9-to-5 job, and they're saying, I just don't know how any of this maybe relates to me. You know, I've got a career. How can I make my career mean something? My career is just solely to allow me to pay my bills. And what you're saying sounds great, but I don't have a business. How can I go out and find a meaning and a purpose to serve when I'm stuck in my 9-to-5 job?
Yeah, it's a great question, because it's not all about the top down. There's so many more people that are servicing in those businesses that are trying to answer that exact question. What I find is, it used to be, this is a generational thing, and you know, there's obvious differences, and it's not you can't paint with a broad brush. But generationally, our parents, part of that purpose was they went to work, they clocked in, clocked out, and their purpose was providing for their families. And that was part of it. And you could go work for a company for 30 years, and then you would provide for your family, you'd help your children have great lives. And what the younger generation, not that it's better, worse, or anything else, it's just different, is that we are finding purpose in different ways.
I love that. Bill Conley, the author of The Success Disconnect. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, brother.
Thank you so much,
you.
Mark.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
This information is given with the understanding that the host nor Business Rockstars is engaged in rendering legal, accounting, business, or other professional advice. Since the details of your situation are unique, you should additionally seek the advice and services of a competent professional.